Hey folks, Joe Sebelia here, and welcome to another episode of the Rock and Roll and Coffee Show. Before we get started, if you're listening to this episode in audio format or watching on Sunset Island Roku channel, please head over to YouTube and join our YouTube family. Subscribe to the channel, hit the like button, and leave a comment. All those things help support the channel, and I would greatly appreciate it. Now, in this episode, my guest is musician Louis Vitek. Louis has performed in many different bands, such as MOD, Mindfunk, and Ministry, just to name a few. Louis talks about his journey through these bands, thoughts on a Mindfunk reunion, which I would love to see, and so much more. Leave a comment below and let me know your thoughts on a Mindfunk reunion. Thanks so much for watching.
It's the Rock and Roll and Coffee Show. Yeah, we do.
You're in Chicago now?
I am in Chicago now. I mean, I'm from Chicago, so yes, but I am in Chicago now.
Okay. Where do you live right now?
I live in Yorkville, Illinois.
Is that by Chicago? I'm not familiar.
It's about an hour and 20 minutes from where I'm at right now.
Okay.
So it's about an hour and 20 outside of the city.
I see. And yeah. You grew up in Chicago, you said?
I did grow up in Chicago.
So what was, when you were getting into music, what was the music scene like at that time?
Oh, it was fantastic. It's a lot different now than it was back then. Everything was live and heavy and loud. And, you know, Chicago scene was thriving, punk rock, metal, you know. I lived by the Cabaret Metro, you know, the Metro in Chicago.
I know of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a pretty, I mean, it's everybody's played there, but I grew up right there in that area, went to school around there and then playing in bands. I had the opportunity to kind of like, that was kind of like home away from home, playing there all the time. All the bands that I played with in Chicago, we played at the Metro, Cubby Bear down the street, Medusas. I mean, you know, that
so
was.
What were the Chicago bands that were happening at that time?
Oh, man. You know, we had E-Trope going on. You know, you had Witch Slayer. I was in a band called Mayhem Incorporated, Lost Cause, Naked Ray Gun. You know, man, I got to dig deep. It's been a long time. But
yeah. When are we talking? When was this?
Oh, I graduated in 81 from high school.
Okay.
And I just started playing, you know, started playing, and right away was playing in bars with the band I was in. We were doing covers at that time. But a year after that, I got together with a whole group of people and had a band called The Assault. And that's when things started to kick in for me. And we were playing at the Metro and at a lot of the Tuts was another venue that was very popular in Chicago. But we had the opportunity to open up for Metallica and Raven.
Nice.
At the Cabaret Metro. It was a great, you know, that was the first time Metallica ever came to Chicago.
What was that like?
Oh, it was crazy. It was crazy.
Was that Kill 'Em All?
That was Kill 'Em All.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was Kill 'Em All. And they actually came back, I think it was last year, to do like an anniversary of that show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which...
With Raven?
Pardon?
Was Raven there?
No, oh, okay. Raven was not there. It was just Metallica. It would have been great if Raven was there, yeah. But... You know, it was a whole, you know, production, but they came back and they played and, you know, the place was packed. I heard I didn't go to the show, but, mm-hmm. You know,
that must have been awesome to see, though.
I would. Everybody I know that went to see it said it was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Were you a metal fan when you were a kid?
Yeah, metal. I mean, I grew up I grew up listening to a lot of Spanish music, but big Kiss fan, you know, Black Sabbath, Carlos Santana was a big influence for in the beginning. Because I was into Santana, Neil Sean was a big influence for me. Because, you know, he played with Santana when he was really young.
Sure.
A lot of those records. So, but I was into Journey. But then, you know, started getting into the metal scene and big German metal. I loved Scorps, you know, Michael Schenker, maybe my number one favorite guitar player.
He's your guy.
He's the guy. Frank Marino was right there with him. You know, but, you know, then as things started to get heavier. You know, so. Okay.
Yeah. So all that stuff had an influence on you. Now, when you formed Mind Funk,
right?
What year was that?
So Mind Funk was like a 1989-ish, I want to say, you know, 80, like, you know, I did MOD from like 80. It's a kind of a blur, but I'm going to try to put the years together.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, MOD was kind of like 87 to 88, you know, it was very short lived. And then I stayed in New York with John Monty. We became roommates and we started to put Mind Funk together around 88, 89.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's back up a little bit to MOD. I mean, you went to New York to join them?
Yeah. So touring, and we wound up playing a festival in Arizona, and MOD was one of the bands playing, and I started talking to Billy right away, and we traded numbers, and he called me out of the blue, and he's like, "I'm gonna start auditioning guitar players. You want to do it? You know, audition, come out and check it out." And I was like, yeah, you know, I can't pass up an opportunity like that. So I definitely did that and went to out to New York, and we hung out and played some music together. And I came back home, sold a bunch of stuff, and went back to New York and started playing with MOD.
Nice. And that's when you met John?
John Monty. Yeah.
Okay. Now, MOD, I remember MOD being when I was a kid. I was never really into it too much.
Right.
I was more into the, I guess, the popular rock, like the Motley Crue's and
sure.
You know, that kind of stuff. But I lived in Florida at the time, and we used to skate and surf. So a lot of my friends were into MOD.
Cool.
I remember that you guys had like a shark.
Yeah, we had a surfing MOD. Was kind of like the beach record, you know, was the whole concept record that Billy wanted to do. So we did it. Yeah.
Did you play on that album?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes.
And is that the only one you played on?
No, and I played on the second record, which was Gross Misconduct. And I played on that album. And we did a video for that. And the song was Gross Misconduct. No, what was the song? The video was True Colors, which was a very popular song that we had on that record.
That had a shark on it as well, right?
Yes, it did. Like
I remember the album covers.
So I think, so when I came in, we did Surfing MOD, and then, he kept the little shark motif in there. Mm-hmm. That's right.
I remember it. I remember seeing that cassette at parties. So you're in MOD for, you said it was short-lived, so about a year or so?
About a year, year and a half. Things weren't going well. Some changes. Billy was going through some changes, you know, and I went out there. I mean, like, it was, for me, it was like, you know, I put everything, I came back to Chicago, I got rid of all my stuff and started brand new, you know, with music and everything in New York. I was like, man, I'm not ready to go back to Chicago, you know. So me and John started talking, we started messing around with music, and because we were managed by the Zazulas, Johnny and Marcia Zazula. Craze Management, we were like, we're going to try to put a band together. And they kind of like hung out with us and helped us get through it. And we started auditioning people, and they were, you know, they were backing us the whole way. So, you know, we auditioned singers, drummers, you know, we had the other guitar player, Jason Coppola, was in a band with John Monte called Chemical Waste.
Right.
You know, and they played together. So that's how Jason got in the band.
Okay. Coppola.
And then, you know, we met Reed, came and auditioned, St. Mark, Celtic Frost. Then we started to do singers, and Pat Dubar, you know, Uniform Choice, you know, he came to audition, and that's how the band came to be.
I see.
You know, yeah.
So kind of, I mean, I would say maybe like hardcore MOD was, and, you know, in that genre. So all you hardcore guys kind of came together to form Mind Funk.
Yes. And the music was a little different. It was heavy, but it had a little bit of a funk groove to it, a little hard funk groove to it, you know.
Where did that come from?
You know, I don't know. I mean, it just happened. You know, we just started jamming, and we started coming up with songs that were just a little bit different, you know, and we kind of stuck with that. And it was really fun, and it was actually, you know, some of it was pretty heavy, and some of it was kind of mainstream rock, but you know, we did, it was fun. I mean, we got a lot of fans from it. We toured Europe like crazy, you know. It was more, we were a little more popular in Europe than the States.
Really?
You know, it was really strange. Like, we would go to Europe, and it was like, great, you know, we were playing festivals and doing theaters and opening up for Slayer and stuff like that. We did 6 weeks with Slayer out there.
Wow. That's a long time.
Yeah, it was crazy, you know? So, and you know, and when we come back to the States, we were doing more like, you know, the club scenes, smaller mm-hmm. clubs and stuff like that. So, mm-hmm.
So when you formed, I mean, how long did it take for you five guys to get together till you found everybody?
It took a good year, or good, really? You know, yeah, 6 months to a year. And, you know, and then it just started to happen real fast.
And this was when? Where are we at now?
I'm say 89-ish or close to 90, 1990.
Right, so you got signed pretty quickly then, because that first album came out early 91.
Yeah, so since we were already managed by Craze Management, we were doing showcases in the room we were rehearsing in, you know, and Johnny and Marsha would set them up, and labels would come check us out, and we wound up getting a deal with Epic Records.
Out of rehearsal?
Or okay. Showcase. It was more of a glorified, you know, it was a staged little setup and little, you know, some lights,
but there wasn't a crowd.
No crowd, just label people, A&R.
Is that a little awkward?
You know, it might have been a little awkward. Yeah. It wasn't awkward. I didn't feel awkward at the time, you know what I mean? But it was pretty crazy. Yeah, you know, it was just, people would come, and we had a couple producers come that like that as well to check out the band. I mean, we wound up recording in Denmark with this Danish guy, Jan Eliasson.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Denmark, because why did you spend that money to go record in Denmark?
Well, you know, it was kind of a management put it together, and we went out there, and we were, I mean, like, Denmark's cool, you know, and we went out there, we were like, you know, I think we all fell in love with it and the idea of going out there and doing it, you know, and the record, I can't remember the name of the band, Megaforce was working with a band that was from Denmark, and that record sounded amazing. And that's how we hooked up with Jan Eliasson, who produced it. I can't even remember the name of the band. And that's how that all went down, you know?
I see. I see.
We were out there for like 4 months.
Right.
It was great.
Yeah. Cause I think I have it right here, actually.
Yeah.
The cassette.
Well, right on.
Yeah.
Right on.
And and you guys actually had a clear cassette. I remember when they went from white to clear. That was the
I do thing. Remember that. Yeah.
But in here, you guys produced it as well, right?
But Yen was like, it was crazy because, you know, after making so many demos, I mean, I recorded with Alex Perielis, you know, and he did SOD and Anthrax and so many bands, but Yen was crazy, man. It was like the first time I ever saw a guy like edit tape. Like, it was crazy. Like, he would edit the drums together, and it was an experience.
Yeah, there's no digital.
No, dude, it was amazing. Like, you know, I'll fix that, chop up the tape, boom, boom, boom. And it was like, wow.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was.
Back at that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And you know, and he pulled out a lot of guitar out of me. You know, I mean, I was into playing, you know, a little speed and stuff like that. But he got me to play a lot more melodic on that record with the solos. And, you know, he was relentless with that. It was like, you know, I remember going back and do it again. That was the first time I ever had that, you know what I mean? Like, but and a lot of those solos, I they came out great.
Yeah, that's great record. Now, was that difficult for you to do that with him having you redo things? Was that hard for you?
It wasn't difficult, but it was tedious, you know, because I was used to going in the studio and just banging it out, you know what I mean? And, but he was just, writes more like a composition when we were doing the solos, you know what I mean? Like, put these parts together, make it a little more melodic, a little more musical. And, it changed the way I played for sure.
Mm.
You know, it was definitely a learning experience. And he did it with everybody, with John Monty. A lot of the bass stuff on that record's great.
Yeah.
With the bass, with distortion and delays and wah-wahs. I mean, like,
yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah. How many songs did you guys have going into the studio to record?
We had, I want to say 12 songs going into the 12 or 13.
How many are on this record? I don't even know.
I want to say 10, 9 or 10.
I can't even see it. I'm old now.
Yeah, yeah. And then we had a couple of songs that didn't make that record that we recorded as well.
Okay. Did they ever get released?
Yeah. They actually did get released. I'm trying to remember. Was the Let Me Touch You remix and Sister Blue. God, I have my mom actually has that record in here somewhere in the house. The album,
this one,
not that one. The it was like a special release.
Oh, okay, awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so you recorded the record, and then I think if I recall, the first single off this was "Big House Burning."
Big House Burning.
Okay,
and then we filmed that with H Gun in Chicago.
In Chicago. Okay.
Yeah.
It looks like a fun video. Was that fun to record?
Oh, it was fun. It was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those guys, they were like just becoming, they were getting pretty popular too with all the film they were doing with other bands.
Okay.
I mean, they did the Nine Inch Nails video, at the exit, the original exit. Where, you know, he's hanging upside down in the video. It's like first videos. They did that video as well. They did a lot of other videos, but they were very popular. But they that came out great. We went into a building. It was probably 150 years old, but they had just fixed the entire basement and all the mechanicals, repainted. You know, they all the chrome was all redone. So we recorded a lot of this stuff down there, spraying water everywhere. And then they went to another place where I used to go swimming when I was a kid, Lincoln Hall. And they recorded all the stuff with Pat and the swimming pool and stuff like that.
Right.
And the water shots.
Nice. Yeah, was the concept of the video theirs, or did you guys?
It was theirs.
Okay.
It was theirs. Yeah. They put the whole thing together.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you guys released that song. And then that was kind of a strange time in music, I think.
It was, yes, very. That was like changing.
Yes, you guys fell right, like a few bands, right in the worst spot you could probably fall.
Probably, yes. If I would have done it all over again, I wouldn't have changed what we were doing. And that was one of the things that I think was bad for the band, is that we kind of changed our musical direction a little bit. And even though Dropped was really a cool record, you know, we got a little grungy, but try to maintain a little metal. And, you know, it was weird. Well,
I think the first record would have fit right in with the stuff that was coming in.
Right.
And I'm not sure, you know, the thoughts on the record company, if because it came out when it did, it was still considered to be part of the first group. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
But it was that record is very, would it definitely fit in with the Pearl Jams and Soundgardens. And,
yeah.
Because Pearl Jam's first record came out 5 months after yours.
Yeah. You know, but that whole scene just exploded.
Yeah.
It was this one huge orgasm of just music.
Yeah.
That all these bands that were fantastic.
Right.
You know, so.
And then, you know, after Big House Burning, you guys released
Sister Blue.
Sister Blue, which leaned more towards the late 80s stuff than it did. So it was almost like backwards.
And what happened with that was, at that time, all the bands were doing that. They were releasing a kind of a hard song, and then the second song was like a ballad. So it was the weird thing happening in the music scene like that back then, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would have definitely picked a different song if I had another chance to do that again.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It's interesting. Now, if a lot of people say that grunge killed, you know, the rock that was in the 80s, which I totally disagree with. I don't agree with that. I think it killed itself. Right. I think it got oversaturated.
I agree with you.
Yeah, people were ready for something new, and that's what came out, and that was
exactly.
And it
happened with that as well. I mean, it just got saturated.
Yeah.
You know, 10 years, it was just like a flash in the pan, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, when you released your album, did you know of the Pearl Jams coming up? And
I did not.
Not yet.
I did not. Not yet. No.
I was just curious if you did, because your releases were so close together. If you already.
Yeah. You know, we were doing the East Coast. We were out on the East Coast, you know, and not realizing that Southwest thing was going down like it was, you know.
Mm hmm.
But you know, I did know of like bands like Mother Love Bone.
Yeah.
I was listening to that. I love that.
Yeah. You know? Great band that was.
Yeah. It was that, you know, it's just, that wasn't really grunge to me. You know, that was more rock. It was more of a rock and roll thing happening there, you know, but, I mean that whole thing changed a lot, you know, changed a lot for a lot of bands, you know.
Now, on the first record, I mean, you guys got on some pretty good tours, I think, right?
We got on some very good tours, yeah. You know, we toured with, we did some we opened up for Faith No More, King's X, you know, we did some stuff with Anthrax. We actually got to do a couple shows with Rage, you know, in the very, very, very beginning, like before it was even a thing, you know. And Testament, you know, some, and then Europe. We did a lot of festivals in Europe. Roskilde. We did the Slayer tour, which was a great tour in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did you guys play? Are you familiar with 98 Rock in Tampa, Florida? They had a livestock show. It was called.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't remember
trying to remember if I saw you guys, and I want to think I did at that, because they used to have all the bands come through there.
Right.
I don't remember.
I do remember playing Florida quite a bit with Mindfunk.
Okay.
Going through there, you know, and hitting a lot of clubs,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's what we were doing in the United States. It was just club tours.
Right. Right. Yeah. Okay. Now, so you're out touring. Did the label pull you off the road to record the second album?
Well, or? After that record, you know, things were changing with the band, and I can't even like remember the, you know, how it went down, but we decided to make a personnel change, and it's the whole grunge thing is happening. The music, you know, we were all living together. There was some, you know, there, like any band, there were some things happening, and so we decided to get another drummer, and that's when we got Jason Everman in the band, you know, and that's when things started changing for us musically, and we started kind of leaning towards the grunge sound a little bit. So Sean Johnson, he was from Seattle. Then we had Jason Everman, who was from, from up that way as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he played with Nirvana and Soundgarden.
Right.
So he was up from that area. So, right. So the band went through another cycle there, you know, and we recorded with Terry Date, and we went to Seattle to do that because, you know, the label trying to push towards that. And, you know, it was one of, and that's how it went down, you know, but like I said, the beginning of Mind Funk, that embryonic part of the band to me was, you know, like you said, I wouldn't have changed, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And we tried to do that change because we were kind of getting pushed towards that change a little bit. And it just didn't, you know, the record came out really good. I'm proud of that record because that was a live record.
Okay.
We recorded that record live, you know, so I'm really proud of that record. And we did it with Terry Date. You know, it was kind of a weird time then, you know, and things were kind of changing for everybody
right.
in the band. Mm-hmm. You know, the Ministry thing started knocking at my door.
Did that happen during that second record?
Yeah, it did. You know, the Al kept bugging me to do, hey, man, you want to do this? You want to come out? You want to do this? You want to come out? You know, and I finally said, you know, I finally, after we were done recording that record, that's what I did.
Did you
know
Al?
I went on that tour.
How'd you guys meet?
I met Al and, you know, in the Chicago scene, and we started talking, and he invited me to the studio, and he was recording a Revolting Cox record, and he was like, you want to play some guitar? And I was like, sure. And I played on a couple tracks on the Finger Licking Good record, you know, and that's how we kind of our relationship began.
Gotcha.
You know, and then he was played some other stuff for me. And when they came through New Jersey with Lollapalooza, you know, I went to go see him, and he was like, hey, you want to play a couple songs? And I was like, sure. You know, and I did Supernaut with them, and, you know, it just happened. You know, he was like, okay, you got to come out and do some shows with us, you know? So that's how that all kind of went down.
So then at that time, I think, so this was what, like 92, 93?
90, right, 92. Yes, it was 92.
The Ministry was pretty big at that time.
Oh, it was just pop. They were just getting ready to pop. Yeah.
So that was almost a no brainer for you.
It was
Mind Funk was going this way.
Yeah.
Going this way.
Yeah. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. But you release a third Mind Funk record.
We did do a third. So I did the Ministry tour with Sepultura and Helmet on that tour. Came back. We were still a band. They knew I was going to do the tour. I let them know. We took a break. And then when I came back from that tour, we went straight on the road. You know, and then a bunch of stuff started happening. You know, Jason Everman was out of the band, and then John Monte quit, and we had to find a bass player. We had to find another guitar player.
Ugh.
I mean, we went through like three bass players, two guitar players. I mean, it just, you know, it was crazy. And we were like, we had a few other songs we wanted to record. So we wound up coming to Chicago and grabbing a bass player that I knew from Chicago, Frank Ciampi, that played in a couple of bands out here. And we recorded People Who Fell from the Sky.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Plus a bunch of other tunes that were sitting on that never got released that are really fucking great. But no. I don't know if they're ever going to come out.
You still have them?
I do, and I've talked to Pat Dubar about it, but I don't know if it's ever going to happen. But
why not?
I don't know.
Do you own the rights to them?
We do. You know, together we do.
That's good.
You know what I mean? For me, I would never. I can't do it. Like, you know, I've had people go, "Oh, just put it out, get another singer," and blah. Yeah. I can't do that because it's not. It wouldn't be the same.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because those songs. It was that entity of me and him, and even Sean Johnson. He was an awesome drummer, one of my favorite drummers, you know, that I've ever played with, you know. But you know, that got really weird, and the ministry thing started getting deeper, and the band kind of fell apart. We released the record, and everybody moved on and did their own thing.
Mm-hmm. So going from Mind Funk to Ministry, I mean, it's kind of two different genres of music, still heavy and rock, but, you know, a little bit different, more industrial on the Ministry side.
Yeah.
Is it different as a guitar player to be in the band?
Yeah, because it was like, you know, it went from like Mind Funk was a little loose and, you know, organic, and Ministry was just like a well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
You know, like, a click track, you know, every song was like, on the money, you know.
Yeah.
And
did you ever play like that before?
Well, I grew up playing to a click track, you know, because I studied, you know, classical guitar when I was young and practiced to a meter all the time. So I was used to doing that, but playing in a situation with a band like that, never.
Did it take a little bit to get used to?
Yeah, I remember when I was going on tour in 92 and the decision was made. I literally had like a week to learn like 22 songs.
Oh man.
You know, it was crazy. Like, you know, I would go to the studio, we would mix, I'd go back to where I was staying. I was learning songs left and right. I went out to, came back to Chicago, rehearsed for 3 days and we were on tour.
Oh man,
that was pretty crazy. Yeah. It was a challenge. It was fun, you know.
Were you already familiar with the songs, or were they these all fresh songs?
I was familiar because I was listening to it already. Okay. You know what I mean? I was already listening to it. I was already a fan. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I was already digging it. So
that makes it a little easier.
Yeah, and it was really fun to play, and you know, and I liked where he was going. He was like, because before I was in the band, it was like five guys playing guitar and two drummers and, you know, his idea of putting together a core, but two, like he had Mike Scoscia in the band. Mikey was an amazing guitar player, you know? So his idea of getting two guys who could play their instruments well, you know, and then a solid drummer, good keyboardist, just keep a nice core together and just make it heavy, and it was great, you know.
Right. How long were you in that band in Minnesota?
1992 till about 2002.
Oh, long time.
A long time, yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it was you know, and the journey was interesting, you know what I mean? It was an interesting journey.
Sure. So in 2002, I mean, why did you leave, or what happened there?
Things were changing, you know, with that situation, you know, Al and Paul, they weren't clicking, and the band was starting to kind of like fade. And I mean, they were the core, you know, and they were just breaking, and, you know, and I had the opportunity to stick it out, but I was already tired, you know. I was just like, okay, it's not what it was, and I think it's time for a life change.
Okay.
And I just came, you know, back to Chicago.
Did you continue music or no?
Yeah, you know, I tried to do some music. I tried to put a label together, which I did. I'm still doing, but yeah, recording music with friends, and I wound up doing my label Woolly Records with my partner Ryan McGuire, and we're still working together. We're actually producing music for people. Still, you know, I got a regular gig. I work with the IATSE Stagehand Union out here, local two, you know, and still in the music biz, just on the other side of it, you know.
Sure.
You know, and enjoying it that way right now.
Yeah. So you're happy.
I'm happy. You know, life has been, had its rough bumps this last year, but yeah, I'm happy and things are cool. You know, and I release a couple things here and there. I work with a project called Tito White and the High Class Gypsies. And then I released a song during the pandemic with that project. And then I did a song under my last name, Svi Technology is what I call it. And I released a tune last year, and I'm thinking about releasing a few tunes this summer, you know, just putting out and just doing it that way. You know what I mean?
Have you ever considered a band again?
You know, I think about it, you know, when I
kind see of a pain in the ass, right?
Well, you know, when you see a really good band, you get the itch I get the itch, but when you see music is a lot different these days, man, it's just different, you know? You know, like I last year I did Motley Crue and Poison and the Def Leppard, you know, I worked the show, but I was there all day. I got to watch it and, you know, and that was fun. And but like with Def Leppard and Motley Crue, there was all this playback, you know, it's just different, you know, it's just, and then Poison came out, you know, and they were just raw, you know, and that was like, that's the rock that I know, you know what I mean? So
I heard Poison took that show. I didn't see that tour, but
yeah, they were great. They were Poison, you know what I mean? Like
just doing their thing,
you know, and then the Motley Crue is great. I love them, you know, and Def Leppard's good, but it was just, it's different, you know, it's just not like it used to be, you know?
Yeah. What did you do at the show? You said you worked it. What did you do there?
Yeah, I was part of the pyrotechnics team.
Oh, well, that's fun.
At that show.
Fun.
Yeah, it is. And I do a gig. I have a company with some guys out here called Just American Guys Stagehands. And I'm also in the union. We do stuff with the union, Stagehands Union out here. We do pyro for the Packers. Green Bay Packers, yeah.
Not the Chicago Bears.
No, not the Chicago Bears. But all the guys that do it are from Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just one of those weird gigs that one of the guys had been working it forever, and I wound up getting on that team, and it's actually fun.
What do you do? Do you have to go set it up like way on top of stadiums?
You know, or? set up the pyro and, you know, plug it all up and get it, you know, you put it around the entire stadium and, you know, and let it go.
Do you get to press the button to get it to?
I'm not the button presser guy, but I do get to put all the, you know, wiring and everything together though.
Yeah.
You know,
it's great.
Yeah. We do. We have these explosive, they're called concussions, you know, and they're freaking loud. It's like a quarter stick of dynamite.
Oh geez.
You know, and these pipes, man. And they just like every time Aaron Rodgers would score a touchdown, they'd set those things off, and it's pretty crazy.
Oh man, sounds dangerous.
It, if you're not careful, it can be.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it, you know, I'm doing that and you know, just enjoying life, enjoying the kids and, you know, just working.
That's good, man.
Playing my guitar and learned. I learned Jose Feliciano's version of "Light My Fire" by the Doors. I just learned
that there was a version.
Yeah, you know, Jose Feliciano. Kind of more of a jazzy flamenco-y version.
I'll have to look that up.
And I just sitting in my room, you know. I got a few days of work in the city, go home for Father's Day, and I got a long week next week. And I'm in the studio tomorrow night with my partner working on a project.
Okay.
But I could send you a couple links if you'd like of a couple that I have.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Love to hear it. Now, your studio and your company with your partner. Now, do you guys, I was reading on your website that you do, do you still do management and stuff? I think it was, or?
You know, we were doing that and that just got crazy. You know, I learned right away how hard that job is.
Oh yeah.
You know, trying to run a label and trying to do that. That was a project, you know, and then we tried to get into the hip hop thing.
Yeah, I noticed a lot of hip hop on your site.
And that got really crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was really cool for a while and then it just got dark.
Yeah.
And then it just wasn't working out. But now we're revamping it again. We had the opportunity to work with one of the American Idol winners. Mm-hmm. He was on the label before he was an American Idol winner.
Okay.
So, you know, we had that happening, which was nice. It was fun, you know, exciting. The label got a little bit of a boost, you know, but I learned right away that managing bands is something I don't want to do.
I don't blame you.
You know.
Yeah. So are you looking for bands? Like, you still stay active with that or no?
No, I mean, we just like people come, if somebody comes and says, hey, we want you to help us produce a song or help us write a song, it's kind of what we're doing right now.
Okay.
We're working with a young lady right now. She's fantastic. And it's kind of like a Amy Winehouse kind of vibe.
Okay.
She's really, really good. We're going to have a couple of those tunes done in about a month.
Okay.
You know? So, and, you know, just doing that kind of thing. And it's nice, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Really is.
You ever pick up your guitar and write a song, or just jamming around and then you're like, this could be a mind funk song?
Yeah, I do it every day.
What about getting together?
You know, I would give it a thought. And if Pat Dubar would be like, hey, let's do another record and make one more run, I'd say let's do it.
I think now's the time. Really,
you know, that would
the way
be
things
time.
Going.
Oh yeah, music needs some kind of needs a little something. You know,
all these festivals and these rock cruise ships and stuff. I mean, you guys.
I was listening to that new song by Extreme. I don't know if you heard it, Rise.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, that
whole album.
I love it.
Yeah.
I got really excited when I heard that. Like, I got chills.
Did you try and learn it?
Oh yeah, I'm already. That was right around the time we were happening Extreme as well. I mean, it was that whole MTV 80s rock kind of thing happening, you know. But I follow Nuno on Instagram, and he's great, you know. So I was, that kind of thing makes me excited. Yeah. It makes me want to be in a band again when I hear stuff like that.
What is Pat doing? Is he playing or is he just out of it altogether?
You know, I don't know, because I haven't talked to him in a long time, you know. And I know he's been, he was always a very athletic individual. I know he did baseball in college and I know he was coaching a football team, high school football team, and having success with that. But I'm not really sure. I know he did the Corporate Avenger for a while. I don't know if you remember that.
Mm-mm.
He's you remember the band Mind Over Four?
No.
Well, he was friends with that singer, and they did a weird rap thing called Corporate Avenger. And he did that for a while. And then there was another thing he did called Sitting Bull. I think that's what they were called. But I don't know what he's doing now, because we haven't. The only guy I really speak to from that band is John Monty. And it's very seldom. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very seldom.
Mm-hmm.
Because he changes his phone number like every year.
Well, man, if you guys could somehow work it out, that would be fantastic.
I would give it a run.
Yeah.
I would give it a run.
Well, good, man.
Cool, man.
Listen, Lewis, it's great talking to you, bud.
You too. And I really appreciate the time. It's awesome.
Yeah. All right.
Well, listen. A couple links and, you know, you could check out what I'm doing, and I'll keep an eye on the show.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to hearing it, man.
Right on, brother.